Wow, that's deep, man. You know, Job is getting real deep poetically. Lo, let that night be solitary. Let no joyful voice come from it. Let them curse it that curse the day who are ready to raise up the morning. Let the stars of its twilight be dark. Let it look for light but have none. Neither let it see the dawning of the day, because it shut not up the doors of my mother's womb and hid not my eye. What did he say? Man, I wish my mother's womb would have been shut up, sewed up, so that I didn't even have to come into this earth. Why didn't I die from the womb? Why did not expire when I came out of my mother's body? Why wasn't I stillborn? Why did the knees receive me? Or why did the breast that I should suck?
To Anchored in Jesus, the teaching ministry of Dr. William R. Glaze, founder of the Pittsburgh Institute of Biblical Studies, author, and senior pastor of Bethany Baptist Church. This is Sonia Hall, thanking you for joining us today for the conclusion of Called to Suffer, Part 2. So let's join Dr. Glaze for the conclusion of Called to Suffer, Part 2.
And I remember I came back and I just kind of looked at that and I said, oh, that didn't happen, did it? That really didn't happen, did it? And there was almost like there was this numbness, and that I was in denial, and I didn't want to act upon it. I didn't want to, embrace that. And so it is, for people who are dealing with loss. Sometimes when that didn't happen, and I give the example in the middle about a dead car battery. You jump in your car and you turn the key. And it doesn't start. Well, wait a minute. Maybe I didn't put the key in right. you go into this denial. Maybe I left the light on. I just need to turn the light off. Or maybe I need to turn the radio off. You start turning all kind of stuff off. No, man, your battery's dead. But you go into denial. Well, I believe that in a sense, that maybe when all this started coming on, Joe, now I would have to think, once again, now I'm not going to stand on this as far as go to my grave preaching this, but I believe for Job that there was a little bit of denial that Job was dealing with, because in chapter 2, in verse 13, it says that Job was sitting there and that his friends came, and we don't know how long Job had been sitting there before they came. And when they came, it says that they were there seven days and seven nights. Now, this may be a metaphor for something. I'm not sure. But the fact of the matter is, whether it's a literal 7 days and seven nights or it's a metaphor, the fact is they were there for a long time without anybody saying anything. And they just sat there. Now, I would believe in my mind that Job was dealing with the fact that, man, this didn't happen to me. This didn't happen to me. You say, how do you know that, Pastor? Well, let me show you. I'm going to show you one reason why I think he may have said that. Turn to chapter 29. Chapter 29 of Job. In verse 12, Job says this. He said, because I delivered the poor that cried. He said, and the fatherless and him that had none to help him. Job said, look, I helped the poor. And I helped the fatherless. He said, the blessing of him that was ready to perish came to me, and I caused the widow's heart to sing for joy. He said, whenever there was a widow in trouble, I helped her out. He went on to say, I put on righteousness, and it clothed me. My justice was like a robe and a diadem. I was eyes to the blind and feet to the lame. He said, man, I helped blind folk. I helped people that couldn't walk. He said, I was a father to the poor, and the cause which came, which I knew not, I searched out. He said, if there was a problem I didn't know about it, I wouldn't look for it to see how I could help somebody. Now, you're going to try to tell me, he said he didn't sit there and think back to say, how can this happen to me? How can this happen to me? I've done nothing but right. And see, now here's where Job's starting to get into a little trouble now, because even though he was a godly man, he was trying to justify himself, instead of just saying, okay, God is at work. Job gets a little antsy here. So I believe that, to a certain degree, Job was dealing with some denial. He was dealing with the fact that, why did this happen to me? How could this happen to me? And then, now once again, even though I'm going through this in a certain succession, it's not necessarily meant to go through step by step. So I'm saying that now, so you don't anybody walk out here saying, well, Pastor Glaze said you got to go through this step. No, I didn't say that. Because as I was reading, you know, some people say that you can be in two stages or three stages at one time. Or you can skip over one and go to another one. So, you know, there's no order or rhyme or reason. Anger. And what is this attitude? I'm upset because this has happened to me. How could this happen to me? But, you know, I'm starting to get a little attitude that this happened. Well, what about, the person in the car? Well, you know, they start getting angry, you know, because you were powerless to do anything. You turn the key and nothing's happening, you know. Then you get out there and kick the tire, pound the dashboard. Why is it like that's going to start the car, right? Giddy up, pow. Ain't nothing happening, you know. Anger. And you know what? I remember, man, when we got fired, man, I was angry with Dr. Falwell. I couldn't stand the man. How did he go hire a professional football coach to come in here and take our jobs? I was hot, man. I was angry. And then you know how it is when you get fired, right? You know, you can't even go get your gear. You know, you got to have security escort you on and off the premises. And they stand there while you get your stuff. You know, man, I was angry. Yeah, angry. And maybe you have dealt with that and you find yourself, you know, dealing with grief and you're just angry. And one of the things that we need to realize that at every stage we find ourselves in, that it may take intervention. Maybe we need to go and seek some assistance and seek someone to come along and help us to deal with the situation if we can't get the victory. And that's one of the beautiful things about finishing off this series, is that I'm going to come back next week. We're going to deal with, how do you deal with anger in the midst of suffering? How do you deal with bitterness and depression in the midst of suffering? So we're going to deal with that next week. So we're not going to leave you hanging. We leave you hanging this week, but we'll get you schooled up next week. If you're not going to be here next week, then you're going to have to get the tape to see how to work your way through it. All right. But Job began to get angry because, look, Job wanted God to show up. Job knew that if God would just show up, that God would vindicate him. And so Job puts an APB out on God. Where is God? Look at chapter 23. Chapter 23. Job in verse 1, then Job answered and said, even today is my complaint bitter. So what is it? There's anger, bitter. Look, he said, man, I'm bitter in my soul. There's some anger. There's some deep anger down in my soul. He said, my complaint is bitter and my stroke is heavier than my groaning. Then look at verse 3. Now here's Job. See, what is Job angry about? He's angry that God hasn't shown up yet. Oh, that I knew where I might find him, that I might come to him and his seat. I would set my cause before him and fill my mouth with arguments. I would know the words which he would answer me and understand what he would say unto me. Will he plead against me with his great power? No, but he would put strength in me. There the righteous might dispute with him, should I be delivered forever from my judge. Behold, I go forward. man, isn't this some of us? I go forward and he is not there. And backward and I can't perceive him. On the left hand, where doth he work? But I cannot behold him. He hideth himself on the right hand that I cannot see him. Wow. Job said, look, I'm turning everywhere for God. Remember, he prefaced all this by saying he had bitterness in his soul. And then he said, I'm looking for God. I'm looking for God to show up in this situation. I'm looking for God to help me in what I'm going through right now. And it seems like God is nowhere around. Man, have you ever felt like that? Have you ever felt like, man, I, I would just, you know, I sometimes I've been so desperate that I just said, God, if you just come down and appear in my living room, that I might be able to make it on. But where are you at, God? And so sometimes when we're dealing with grief, anger wells up in our soul. Bitterness is in our spirit. And if we don't take control of that, if we don't get intervention, it can overcome us. And we can find it lasting far beyond the situation that we're in. The situation will be long over, and yet and still that bitterness and that anger will just still be seething and writhing in our spirits. And we won't move ahead. And so here we see anger. And then the next stage is what she calls bargaining. And the whole idea of bargaining is if I would have done this or if I do that, then maybe things would have been better. You know, maybe if I'd have did this when the person was alive, maybe that wouldn't have happened. And you begin in your mind to bargain and to, you know, try to say, make a deal, whether it's with God or just make a deal with yourself or make a deal with whoever. You know, you begin to bargain because why? You get desperate. You're in this situation and you want to see, you know, some relief. You know, some people just say, man, had I done this or if I'd have done that, you know, maybe this wouldn't have happened. Or maybe if this happens now, maybe this will get straightened out. And you just begin to go through all these gyrations in your mind and in your heart. And what about the car situation? So you reason, if the car will start just one more time, just start up one more time. And he said, I'll make sure that this never happens again. I'll make sure I check the water in my battery. I'll make sure that I keep my battery charged up. Yo, just one more time. I just need you. Come on, baby. Come on. Daddy needs to get to work now. Come on, one more time. Just start one more time. You standing out there, you trying to bargain with your car. just one more time. Well, look at Job. Job wants to make a deal with God. He says to the Lord, he said, Lord, I mean, this is how desperate it is. Lord, look, if you just take your hand off my life, because I know the only reason I'm alive is because you're sustaining me. If you just take your hand off my life and just let me die, I'll be at comfort. I'll find comfort, God. So Job is trying to make a deal with God. Look at Job chapter 6. Job chapter 6, verses 8 through 10. Oh, that I might have my request and that God would grant me this thing that I long for. Even that it would please God to destroy me, that he would let loose his hand and cut me off. Then should I yet have comfort. Yea, I would harden myself in sorrow. Let him spare not, for I have not concealed the words of the Holy One. Job said, God, just take your hand off my life. Just let me go. He said, then at least I'll have comfort. At least I won't have to deal with the you know, back on that first page, Job's the variation of suffering. Lord, look, let's make a deal. At least if you just take your hand off my life, I know I won't have long. I know I'll die. And then you know what? I won't be, you know, what's the song say? Soon we'll be finished with the troubles of the world. That's what Job was saying. Look, soon I'll be finished. Lord, if you just take your hand off my life, I'll be finished with the troubles of the world. All right? Bargaining. And many people want to bargain as they work through it. Then we move on to depression. You know, that people begin, and here's what, now I will say this, that I see a lot of people that don't handle grief the right way. This is where they end up right here, depression. I feel empty, lonely, hopeless, and I just want to have a pity party. You know, man, I just want to feel, I feel sorry, and I want everybody else to feel sorry for me. And we just going to have this great big old pity party. Well, what about the guy in the car? What's the use? I'm going to get reprimanded or even fired because I'm going to be late to work. And then how am I going to support my family? Woe is me. Woe is me. You know, all of a sudden, now you done gone through this whole scenario because your car won't start. You know, oh, man, you know, my boss is going to be on me. You know, I might even get fired for this. And, you know, then how am I going to take care of my family? You know, I just bought that new car, making them payments. And, you know, my house, you know, man, how we... All these scenarios come up, and that whole idea of depression. And then look at Job. I'm going to tell you what, as godly of man as Job was, Job spun into some deep depression. Now, you're going to say, look at chapter 3. Look at the depth of depression that Job went into. He said in verse 1, after this, Job opened his mouth and cursed his day and spoke, let the day perish in which I was born, and the night in which it was said, there is a male child conceived. Job said, you know, I wish that day would have never even came to be. Let that day be darkness. Let not God regard it from above, neither let the light shine on it. You know, Job said, I wish there was a day missing in the calendar. I wish there was one day that never appeared in the calendar, and that was the day that I was born. Let darkness and the shadow of death stain it. Let a cloud dwell upon it. Let blackness of day terrify it. You know, let blackness of day scare that day from even coming. When that day would even think about coming, let the darkness of the day scare it from even thinking about coming. As for that night, let darkness seize upon it. Let it not be joined unto the days of the year. Let it not come unto the number of the months. Wow, that's deep, man. You know, Job is getting real deep poetically. Lo, let that night be solitary. Let no joyful voice come from it. Let them curse it that curse the day, who are ready to raise up the morning. Let the stars of his twilight be dark. Let it look for light, but have none. Neither let it see the dawning of the day, because it shut not up the doors of my mother's womb and hid not my eye. What did he say? Man, I wish my mother's womb would have been shut up, sewed up, so that I didn't even have to come into this earth. Why didn't I die from the womb? Why did not expire when I came out of my mother's body? Why wasn't I stillborn? Why did the knees receive me? Or why did the breast that I should suck? For now should I have lain still and been quiet. I should have slept, and I would have been at rest. If I'd have never came, then I'd have been at rest. With the kings and counselors of the earth, who built desolate places for themselves, or with princes that had gold, who filled their houses with silver, or as a hidden untimely birth, I had not been, as infants who never saw the light. There the wicked cease from troubling, and the weary are at rest. Now, I've heard that particular verse right there preached at funerals a lot of time, but it's taken out of context, because really you don't want to go where the wicked cease from troubling and the weary are at rest. Because what was Job talking about? He's talking about being dead. Now, I've heard people say, well, you know, we want to go to that place where the wicked cease from troubling and the weary are at rest, like that's heaven. No, that's not heaven. That's not what Job was talking about. Job was talking about death. And so we see he plunges into utter depression, and he even curses the day that he was born. But here's where we all have to come when we deal with grief. And that is this point of acceptance, you know. And acceptance says, I'm ready for whatever comes. You see, sometimes you got to work your way through that process. But then you have to come and say, well, I'm ready for whatever comes. What about the car? The car that's not going to start? Hey, let me find another way to work, and I'll deal with it when I get back. Let me call AAA, have them come. You know, if I got time to wait around, then they can jump and I can go to work. If not, I'll get me a ride. You know, get Pat or somebody to give me a ride, and I'll deal with this when I come back. Acceptance. You've got to accept the fact that this tragedy has happened in your life, whatever it may be. You got to accept that fact. And we see that Job, there was points in time when Job accepted the fact that he had to deal with what he had to deal with. And that's found in Job chapter 14 and verse 14. Job 14. He said, if a man die, shall he live again? Job said, all the days of my appointed time will I wait till my change come. He said, look, I got to accept it. He said, you know, going back, nightmares, weight loss, red eyes, sleepless night, bad breath, peeling skin, high fever, boils all over his body, open sores, worms eating his flesh. What did he say? Nothing I can do but wait until my change comes. That's all I can do. And see, it's at that point that you are ready to deal with whatever grief you have, with whatever suffering that you're going through. When you accept the fact that this is a reality in your life, then you can begin to deal with it. And as we continue to move on in this series, from this point on, we'll be dealing with how do you accept and how do you deal with the grief, the suffering, the tragedy, the trials that you have to go through. Somebody listed this below, and I'll just give you this for a temporary fix for those who might want something to hold on to right now, and we'll fill in the skeleton in the next couple of weeks. But somebody gave the word tear, that the T stands for to accept the reality of the loss. The E stands for experience the pain. You know, sometimes you just got to feel it, man. You know, we don't want to feel pain. Like I said last week, you know, we'd rather go look in the window where the three-piece $500 suits are than to see the bag man or lady on the corner begging. You know, we'd rather go watch the movie than go to the nursing home or go. You know, I tell you one of the most difficult things, saints. Let me tell you something. One of the most difficult things to do, and I'm saying this as a pastor, and I'm saying this from experience, is to have to talk to somebody that just lost a loved one. That's one of the hardest things to do. Why? Because you know that person is hurting. And there's just something about us that wants to move away from that. You know, we want to move away from that. Why? Because we don't want to feel that pain. You know, maybe we feel, well, I don't know what to say, or I don't know how to handle it. You know, but yet and still, that sometimes we got to deal with the reality of pain in our lives. The A stands for adjust to the new environment without the lost object. You know, if it's a loved one, if it's a spouse, if it's a job, so you got to make an adjustment. It just can't be, well, we're going to move on, business as usual. See, you got to make an adjustment, and you got to move on. And then the R stands for reinvest in the new reality. That means that now you got to start investing in where you are right now, and you got to start building from there. But we'll talk about that a little bit more as we move along. Called to suffering. We see here that Job was called to suffer. He never knew why he had to suffer. We may not ever know why we have to suffer, but it is a reality of life, and we have to be ready for it at any point in time. Like I said, and I conclude with this, there are some individuals that were sitting here last week, didn't know what was around the corner, had no idea, but they found themselves walking the path of suffering. And I want to encourage you that, yeah, I like to get my praise on. I like to worship God. I like to have a good time, but I'm also real too, and I understand that I got to be prepared to deal with the difficult times when they come also. See, as a pastor sometimes, I love to just get up here and preach the goodness of the Lord, you know, making folks shout, making y'all clap. Yeah, I like that now. That makes me feel good. But see, once again, I mean, we've had too much happen here at Bethany, and as the pastor, you know, God has called me to, you know, the shepherd his people. And so, you know, this is a part of the shepherding process. And I would hope that, once again, if you are not here right now, then maybe you can help somebody else that might be dealing with a situation.
Thank you for joining us today on Anchored in Jesus. Tune in next time for the first half of Called to Suffer, Part 3. If you would like to request an audio copy of today's message, Called to Suffer, Part 2, you can contact us at anchoredinjesus.org and request Called to Suffer, Part 2. That's anchoredinjesus.org and request Called to Suffer, Part 2. Or call us at 877-831-5060. When you visit our website, anchoredinjesus.org, you can view many of the other teachings by Dr. Glaze. Dr. Glaze is the author of 11 books. For more information about these resources and how to order, visit anchoredinjesus.org or call 877-831-5060. We also need to like us on Facebook at Anchored in Jesus Ministries. If you would like to make a financial contribution, please visit our website, anchoredinjesus.org, or send it to Anchored in Jesus at P.O. Box 24034, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania 15206. Once again, that website is anchoredinjesus.org, or you can send your financial contribution to Anchored in Jesus at P.O. Box 4034, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania 15206. It's through your prayers and gifts that we remain on the air. Our title, Anchored in Jesus, comes from Hebrews chapter verse 19, which lets us know that Jesus is our high priest and an anchor for the soul. Now for Dr. Glaze and our volunteer staff, I'm Sonia Hall reminding you, you don't toss in the storms of life. Your soul can be anchored in the Lord.